Freedom in art, as in life, Marion Moore writes, is the result of a discipline imposed by ourselves. The art of Denise Levertov has grace and freedom, for its discipline has been chosen in love. She has, for one thing, no thought of a literature or a performance or an entertainment in writing these poems. They have been written not for us to admire her, so let us not admire her. They have been written not for us to be impressed by her learning or her wit or her passionate vitality, so let us go with her, away from the concerns that so often bring us to poetry readings, away to seek ourselves as she has sought, carried by her art that has found the way for her and will for us to the heart of the reality to rediscover the world, overland to the islands of intense feeling, to the moments when the texts of what was outer become inner, to these very streets, rooms, shores, where we too can see and hear, can come to have our share in the poetry of an immortalized here and now.
The first time that I've read to more than about two people at a time, so if I read too fast or anything like that, I'd be glad if you'd tell me. I'm going to start with a poem that's easy to read, try to get myself off to a good start, The Departure. Have you got the moon safe? Please, tie those strings a little tighter. This loaf, push it down further, the light is crushing it. Such a baguette, golden brown, and so white inside, you don't see it every day nowadays. And for God's sakes, don't let's leave in the end without the ocean. Put it in there among the shoes, and tie the moon on behind. It's time. Illustrious ancestors. The wrath of northern white Russia declined in his youth to learn the language of birds because the extraneous did not interest him. Nevertheless, when he grew old, it was found he understood them anyway, having listened well and, as it is said, prayed with the bench and the floor. He used what was at hand, as did Angel Jones of Mold, whose meditations were sewn into coats and breeches. Well, I would like to make, thinking some lines still taught between me and them, poems direct as what the birds said, hard as a floor, sound as a bench, mysterious as the silence when the tailor would pause with his needle in the air. This poem is called The Dead, and it wasn't written very long ago, but it harks back to a time during and just after the war when I worked as a nurse. The Dead. Earnestly I looked into their abandoned faces at the moment of death, and while I bandaged their slack jaws and straightened waxy, unresistant limbs and plugged the orifices with cotton. But like everyone else, I learned, each time nothing new, only that, as it were, a music, however harsh, that held us, however loosely, had stopped and left a heavy, thick silence in its place. This poem, when it was published in a magazine, was called The Shifting, because I didn't have a title for it, and the editor just used the first words as a title, but I've since renamed it The Turning. The shifting, the shaded change of pleasure, soft warm ashes in place of fire, out irremediably, and a door blown open, planes tilt, interact, objects fuse, disperse, this chair further from that table, hold it, focus on that, this table closer to that shadow. It's what appalls the heart's red rust. Turn, turn, loyalty betrays. It's the fall of it, the drift, pleasure, source and sequence, lift of golden cold sea. I'm now going to read some poems about New York. They're not in chronological order because I don't remember the chronological order anymore, but they're all more or less directly related to the city, or to how I felt about the city anyway. Take a look at water first. From Manhattan. Green-spined, river-bounded, desired of summer storms. City, act of joy. Spring evenings in sea light, facades relax. Steel and stone float among clouds. City, act of power. And always nightfall flicks fantasy on black air, chips of light, flashing, scattered, city, act of energy. Over littered avenues and yawn of breaks at the lights, hesitation of dawn, dazed behind smoke feathers. City, act of hope. But down past many windows, each holding less, less light, down, each weak pain tossing, feebly handing, letting drop pale suns to lower pains, fall, many fathoms down, city, desolation. Fall to cracks between cages where men are walking, jostled in dirty light, reflected light, are running. City, gesture of greed. The derelict and the diamond sharp, in shadow of inordinate monuments. It is to them who speaks must speak, precise as rain's first spitting words on the pavement. Pick out the core, lost impulse. Give it back. This is where I live in New York. 15th Street. Almost dark, and the wind off the river. It's November, but quite a few, kids mostly, out on the stoops. A bunch of young girls posed on the steps of this one. Ladies of the court. Oh, one's the queen. Red hair and that turn of the head, a long neck. A woman in black's going up between them now, slowly, bringing home groceries. Where's Johnny tonight? Oh, I'm mad at him. Deirdre, tossing her head. Ha! Huh. The woman over her shoulder, in fond contempt, going on in. The sky has cleared itself of clouds, as always at this hour, preparing for the stars it's hard to see. Hockey players on roller skates are shouting hard. They glide subtly to dodge a cab, not looking at it. Here, a few doors down, two youths reveal and exchange scraps of their work world, still new. He pushes himself right to the front, this guy, swearing and hollering. So we said to him, "Listen, mister, there's other people waiting besides you." We. It's here, here, here. It frees, it creates relief. Poetry, element in which we move as fish in water. The river hooting, illusion of north lights shaking in fever over 14th, and away uptown 42nd. It's getting late. The kids drift off indoors. Better get supper. Deirdre will forgive Johnny later in this unlit doorway, laundrette, saying, "Good night. So long. Good night. I'll see you around." Something to nullify the tall women on Madison, sniffing, peering at windows, sharp-eyed, the ones with little hope beyond the next hat. To mitigate, rather, one impression weakens the force of the other. Unequal forces, but unmeasured, that the whirlpool remains, tossing aside the around Manhattan boat. That the rocks remain, snarling among dusty lawns, that's something. It was you who leapt from Spite and Dival into the desert, into another whirlpool, the pit of it, where money rattles against the rocks as it's sucked down. If it's a battle, I'll take sides. But not with nature. She won't fight, not this battle. There's no sequence beyond that they both exist as elements of the city. Your whirlpool and my bores stuffed with dollar bills, alive only with maggots. What then? Whatever's animated, that fights back. Not the neurotic thrust at subway doors, but, well, like the kids from junior high, yelling when they let them out, chattering in quick Spanish. Their faces change from moment to moment, both the beautiful ones and those deformed by want. They yell and stamp and cuff and wallop and shriek as the bus sways off with them. And some, before the enraged monitor, risk death each day to cling to the backs of trucks waving. And some are grave, demure, but have earrings that shine and tremble. You're almost lyrical. Oh, listen, it's as if in their violent joy they were almost about to be silent all at once and weep in concourse. And the Minotaur will devour them. It's life against death, and death wins, and will uproot the rocks too for pastime. Deformed life, rather, the mask-faced buyers of bric-a-brac, are the detritus only of a ferocious energy. A monster. Greed, is it? Alive, yes. Whose victims multiply quicker than it eats, and stubbornly flourish in the shadow of it. This poem is called People at Night, and it's derived from a poem by Rilke. That's to say, parts of it are direct adaptations of that poem, and parts of it take right off into America. The Rilke poem is called Mention by Nach, the really the same title. A knife that cuts between you and you and you and you and you and me jostles us apart, a man elbowing through a crowd. We won't look for each other either. Wander off, each alone, not looking in the slow crowd. Among sideshows, under movie signs, pictures made of a million lights, giants that move and again move, again, above a cloud of thick smells, franks, roasted nut meats. Or going up to some apartment, yours or yours, finding someone sitting in the dark. Who is it really? So you switch the light on to see. You know the name, but who is it? But you won't see. The fluorescent light flickers sullenly. A pause. But you command. It grabs each face and holds it up by the hair for you, mask after mask. You and you and you and I repeat gestures that make do when speech has failed. And talk, laughing, saying, I and I, meaning anybody, no one. Central Park, winter, after sunset. Below the darkening, fading rose, to which, straining upward, black branches address themselves, clowns of alas, the lights in multitudinous windows are bells in Java. A sense of festival, but somewhere far off, sounds from over water. The frosty field undulates from Holland to Mexico. Space, or space as dreams dissolve it. I have a poem here called An Innocent, and it has two versions because I first wrote a longer version, and then I felt that it was too long and flat. So I wrote another one, very much condensed. But reading over the first one, I felt that it had things in that I really still wanted, so I kept them both. this is the first version. An Innocent. At 9 on Hudson Street, by 10 through rotten mounds of food scraps in Chelsea, and on north with perhaps some glove or what to show for his pains. Pink face, curved nose, white moustache, white hair curling over his collar, an army greatcoat. A blue sack, or sometimes a white sack stenciled with faded dollar signs. It's not his thoroughness and speed distinguish him, so much as the invention he wears, intimate as a hearing aid, an aid to delicate poking, a hook attached to his arm, projecting beyond the hand. One, hearing of this prince of scavengers, cried out in horror at that bad dream of a hook, methodical defilement coyly reduced. And I too recoiled then, but later thought my disgust false. For I'd seen on the old man's face only the calm, intense, look of a craftsman, innocent. He accepts what we reject, endlessly stuffing his flour sack, silent, no one speaks to him, from can to can, an endless city of refuse, and makes some kind of life from it. His face rebukes us. This is the second version. Pink-faced, white-haired, aquiline old man, endlessly stuffing your flour sack. With what? Scraps from an endless city of refuse. Silent all day from can to can, picking garbage with an ingenious hook. It's the hook we most recoil from, in false disgust. Calm, intense, the face of a craftsman, innocent. Okay, well, perhaps I'll read the other New York things and then stop and have something new. Hello. Jackson Square. This is Jackson Square in New York. I believe there is a Jackson Square here, but this is the New York Jackson Square. Bravo! The brave sunshine. A triangle of green contains the sleek and various pigeons, the starving and vendors, and all who sit on benches in the morning to sun tenacious hopes. Indeed, a gay morning for hope to feed on, greedy as the green and gray and purple preening birds, feeding in a flock now here, now there, parading for the pleasure of old heroes and witches, all the forlorn. Zest. Dispose your energies, practice economies, go indoors refusing to attend the evening languors of spring. Work by a strong light, scour the pots, destroy old letters. Finally, before sleep, walk on the roof where the smell of soot recalls a snowfall. Over the red darkness, dolphins roll and tumble, flashing the spray of a green sky. Beyond the end. In nature, there's no choice. Flowers swing their heads in the wind. Sun and moon are as they are. But we seem almost a habit, not just available death. It's energy, a spider's thread, not to go on living, but to quicken, to activate, extend. Some have it, they force it, with work, or laughter, or even the act of buying, if that's all they can lay hands on. The girls crowding the stores, where light, color, solid dreams are, what gay desire. It's their festival, ring game, warfare, mystery. It has no grace like that of the grass, the humble rhythms, the falling and rising of leaf and star. It's barely a constant, like salt, take it or leave it. The hewers of wood and so on, every damned craftsman has it while he's working. But it's not a question of work. Some shine with it in repose. Maybe it is response, the will to respond. Reason can give nothing at all like the response to desire. Maybe a gritting of the teeth to go just that much further, beyond the end, beyond whatever ends, to begin, to be, to defy. The gypsy's window. It seems a stage backed by imaginations of velvet, cotton, satin, loops and stripes. A lovely unconcern scattered the trivial plates, the rosaries, and centered a narrow-necked dark vase, unopened yellow and pink paper roses, a luxury of open red paper roses. Watching the trucks go by from stiff chairs behind the window show, an old, bandanaed, brutal, dignified woman, a young, beautiful woman, her mouth a huge, contemptuous rose. The courage of natural rhetoric tosses to dusty Hudson Street the chance of poetry. A chance poetry gives passion to the roses in the gypsy's window in a blue vase look real, as unreal as real roses. Shall I take a break now? I'm going to try to read a little louder this time because I've been told that people in the back, some people in the back can't hear very well. And if I don't read loud enough, will somebody please tell me when I finish this poem? And I'll try harder. I'm going to read a group of love poems and marriage poems. The Lovers. She. Since you have made me beautiful, I'm afraid not to be beautiful. The silvery dark mirror looks past me. I cannot accept its silence, the silence of your absence. I want my love for you to shine from my eyes and hair, till all the world wonders at the light your love has made. He. At night, waking alone, I see you as if in a clear light, a flower held in the teeth of the dark. The mirror, caught in its solitude, cannot believe you as I believe. The third dimension. Who'd believe me if I said they took and split me open from scalp to crotch and still I'm alive and walk around pleased with the sun and all the world's bounty? Honesty isn't so simple. A simple honesty is nothing but a lie. Don't the trees hide the wind between their leaves and speak in whispers? The third dimension hides itself. If the roadmen crack stones. The stones are stones. But love cracked me open, and I'm alive to tell the tale, but not honestly. The words change it. Let it be, here in the sweet sun, a fiction, while I breathe and change pace. Thank you. Everything that acts is actual. The title of this poem is taken from Jung. It comes in some essay of Jung's. Everything that acts is actual. From the tawny light, from the rainy night, from the imagination finding itself and more than itself, alone and more than alone, at the bottom of the well where the moon lives. Can you pull me into December, a lowland of space, perception of space, towering of shadows of clouds blown upon clouds over new ground, new made, under heavy December footsteps, the only way to live? The flawed moon acts on the truth and makes an autumn of tentative silences. You lived, but somewhere else. Your presence touched others, ring upon ring, and changed. Did you think I would not change? The black moon turns away its work done. A tenderness, unspoken autumn. We are faithful only to the imagination. What the imagination seizes as beauty must be truth. What holds you to what you see of me is that grasp alone. Most people know that the words, what the imagination seizes as beauty must be truth, is from a letter of Keats. The marriage. You have my attention, which is a tenderness beyond what I may say, and I have your constancy to something beyond myself. The force of your commitment charges us. We live in the sweep of it, taking courage one from the other. The marriage, too. I want to speak to you. To whom else should I speak? It is you who make a world to speak of. In your warmth, the fruits ripen, all the apples and pears that grow on the south wall of my head. If you listen, it rains for them, then they drink. If you speak in response, the seeds jump into the ground. Speak or be silent. Your silence will speak to me. Laying the dust. What a sweet smell rises when you lay the dust. Bucket after bucket of water thrown on the yellow grass. The water flashes each time you make it leap, arching its glittering back. The sound of more water pouring into the pail almost quenches my thirst. Surely when flowers grow here, they'll not smell sweeter than this wet ground suddenly black. Thank you. The poems I'm going to read next are all Mexican poems. I mean, they were written in Mexico, and they're not all about Mexico, but Mexico got into them anyway, somehow. The bird. That crazy bird, always laughing. He sits on the wall they are building, the wall which will hide the horizon, and laughs like mad every time we open our mouths to say, I love you, I hate you, etc. He came only since the green rain came and softened everything, making mud of the cracked, self-respecting earth and rotting the red flowers from their stems. Yes, the rain, the trucks full of pink bricks, that crazy eavesdropping bird came together and finished the days of burning and silence and distance. Obsessions. Maybe it is true we have to return to the black air of Ashcan City, because it is there the most life was burned, as ghosts or criminals return. But no, the city has no monopoly of intense life. The dust burned golden or violet in the wide land to which we ran away. Images of passion sprang out of the land as whirlwinds or red flowers. Your hands opened in anguish or clenched in violence under that sun, and clasped my hands in that place to which we will not return, where so much happened that no one else noticed, where the city's ashes that we brought with us flew into the intense sky still burning. The springtime. The red eyes of rabbits aren't sad. No one passes the sad golden village in a barge anymore. The sunset will leave it alone. If the curtains hang askew, it is no one's fault. Around and around and around, everywhere the same sound of wheels going and things growing older, growing silent. If the dogs bark to each other all night and their eyes flash red, that's nobody's business. They have a great space of dark to bark across. The rabbits will bare their teeth at the spring moon. Overland to the islands. Let's go, much as that dog goes, intently haphazard. The Mexican light on a day that smells like autumn in Connecticut makes iris ripples on his black gleaming fur. And that too is as one would desire, a radiance consorting with the dance. Under his feet, rocks and mud, his imagination, sniffing, engaged in its perceptions. Dancing edgeways, there's nothing the dog disdains on his way. Nevertheless, he keeps moving, changing pace and approach, but not direction. Every step and arrival. The words every step and arrival are from a letter by Rilke about Paris. He said that in Paris, every step you took was an arrival. Sunday afternoon. After the first communion and the bank... excuse me, I'll start again because I... still a little dry. Sunday afternoon. After the first communion and the banquet of mangoes and bridal cake, the young daughters of the coffee merchant lay down for a long siesta, and their white dresses lay beside them in quietness, and the white veils floated in their dreams as the flies buzzed. But as the afternoon burned to a close, they rose and ran about the neighborhood among the half-built villas, alive, alive, kicking a basketball, wearing other new dresses of blood-red velvet. Lonely man. An open world within its mountain rim. Trees on the plain lifting their heads, fine strokes of grass, stretching themselves to breathe the last of the light. Where a man riding horseback raises dust under the eucalyptus trees a long way off, the dust is gray-gold, a cloud of pollen. A field of cosmere turns all its many faces of wide open flowers west to the light. It is your loneliness, your energy baffled in the stillness, gives an edge to the shadows, the great sweep of mountain shadow, shadows of ants and leaves, the stones of the road, each with its shadow, and you with your long shadow, closing your book and standing up to stretch your long shadow arms stretching back of you, baffled. Action. I can lay down that history. I can lay down my glasses. I can lay down the imaginary list of what to forget and what must be done. I can shake the sun out of my eyes and lay everything down on the hot sand and cross the whispering threshold and walk right into the clear sea and float there, my long hair floating and fishes vanishing all around me. Deep water. Little by little, one comes to know the limits and depths of power. The Dead Butterfly. One. Now I see its whiteness is not white, but green, traced with green, and resembles the stones of which the city is built, quarried high in the mountains. Two. Everywhere among the marigolds, the rain-blown roses and the hedges of tamarisk are white butterflies this morning, in constant tremulous movement. Only those that lie dead revealing their rock-green color and the bold cut of the wings. Tomatlan, Variations. 1. The sea quiet, shadow-colored and without shadows, from which shall rise the sea wind, moving swiftly towards the steep jungles, the sea wind, the awakener. 2. The sea wind is a panther moving swiftly towards the mountain jungles. Its silky fur brushes me. 3. The green palmettos of the blue jungle shake their green breasts, their stiff green hair. The wind, the sea wind is come and touches them lightly and strokes them and screws them until they are blue flames, green smoke, and screws them again. 4. At the touch of the sea wind, the palms shake their green breasts, their rustling fingers, flames of desire and pleasure. The sea wind that moves like a panther blows the spray inland, voluptuous and simple. The world is larger than one had thought. It is at new peace shades the mind here with jungle shadows frayed by the sea wind. One a.m. The kitchen patio in snowy moonlight. That snow silence, that abandon to stillness. The sawhorse, the concrete washtub, snow blue. The wash line bowed under its snow fur. Moon has silenced the crickets. The summer frogs hold their breath. Summer night. Standing one-legged, a crane in the snow marsh, staring at snow moon. The sharks. Well then, the last day the sharks appeared. Dark fins appear, innocent as if in fair warning. The sea becomes sinister. Are they everywhere? I tell you, they break 6 feet of water. Isn't it the same sea, and won't we play in it any more? I liked it clear, and not too calm, enough waves to fly in on. For the first time, I dared to swim out of my depth. It was sundown when they came. The time when a sheen of copper stills the sea, not dark enough the moonlight, clear enough to see them easily, dark the sharp lift of the fins. Broken glass. Two bean-fed boys set bottles on the wall yesterday and shied at them for a half hour with desperate energy, taking their stand back away in the rubbled lot. Now the green fragments glitter. Is there a lizard stirred among them? The black goat that goes ahead of the cows picks by in a hurry, her udders rocking. She hears something I don't hear. The young ivy leaves are shining. Is it spring? Triple feature. Innocent decision to enjoy, and the pathos of hopefulness of his solicitude. He in mended serape, she having plaited carefully magenta ribbons into her hair, the baby a bundle in her rebozo, the kid at her skirts unflinchingly serious under a handed down sombrero. all regarding the stills with full attention, preparing to pay and go in to worlds of shadow violence, half familiar, warm with popcorn, icy with strange motives, barbarous splendors. The lagoon. This lagoon, with its glass shadows and naked golden shallows, the mangrove island, home of white herons, recalls the Loire at La Charité that ran swiftly in quiet ripples, brimful of clouds from the evening sky. In both, the presence of a rippling quiet, limpid over the sandbars, suspended, and drawing over the depths long lines of beveled darkness, draws the mind down to its own depths, where the imagination swims, shining dark-scaled fish, swims and waits, flashes, waits and wavers, shining of its own light. The whirlwind. The doors keep rattling. I stick palms between their teeth to stop them. The brown dust twirls up outside the window off the dead jicama field, scares the curtains, spirals away to the dirty hollow where the cesspools are and the most ants, and beyond to the unfenced pasture land where nothing will get in its way for miles, and it can curtsy itself at last into summer royal. The doors keep rattling and shivering, desperate for a poem to stuff into their maws that will silence them. I know what they want. They want, in all their wooden strength, to fly off on the whirlwind into the great nothingness. From the life of the pepper trees. 1. The pepper trees. Cats are stretching in the doorways, sure of everything. It is morning. But the pepper trees stand aside in diffidence with berries of modest red. Branch above branch, an air of lightness, of shadows scattered lightly. A cat closes upon its shadow. Up and up goes the sun, sure of everything. The pepper trees shiver a little. Robust and soot-black, the cat leaps to a low branch. Leaves close about him. 2. The yellow moon dreamily tipping buttons of light down among the leaves. Marimba, marimba, from beyond the black street. Somebody dancing, somebody getting the hell out of here. Shadows of cats weave round the tree trunks, the exposed, knotty roots. 3. The man on the bed sleeping, defenseless. Look, his bare long feet together, sideways, keeping each other warm. And the foreshortened shoulders, the head barely visible. He is good. Let him sleep. But the third pepper tree is restless, twitching thin leaves in the light of afternoon. After a while, it walks over and taps on the upstairs window with a bunch of red berries. Will he wake? A supermarket in Guadalajara, Mexico. In the supermercado, the music, sweet as the hot afternoon, wanders among the watermelons, the melons with sumptuous tomatoes, and lingers among the tequila bottles, rum Bacardi, rompope. It hovers like flies round the butchers, handsome and gay, as they dreamily sharpen their knives, and the beautiful girl cashiers, relaxed in the lap of the hot afternoon, breathe in time to the music, whether they know it or not, at the glossy supermercado, the super supermercado. Pleasures. I like to find what's not found at once, but lies within something of another nature, in repose, distinct. Gull feathers of glass, hidden in white pulp, the bones of squid, which I pull out and lay blade by blade on the draining board, tapered as if for swiftness to pierce the heart, but fragile, substance belying design. Or fruit, mamey, cased in rough brown peel, the flesh rose amber, and the seed a stone of wood carved and polished, walnut-colored, formed like a Brazil nut, but large, large enough to fill the hungry palm of a hand. I like the juicy stem of grass that grows within the coarser leaf folded round, and the butter-yellow glow in the narrow flute from which the morning glory opens blue and cool on a hot morning. This one is called Pure Products, and I guess everybody knows what that is from. The Pure Products of America Go Mad. Pure Products. To the sea they came, 2,000 miles in an old bus, fitted with brittle shelves and makeshift beds, and cluttered with U.S. canned goods. To the sea, on which they paddle inner tubes, and the low hovering sun, from which the old woman hides her head under what looks like a straw wastebasket. Yep, they cured me all right, but see, it made my breast grow like a woman's. And she, something hurts him in his chest. I think maybe it's his heart. And hers I can see beating at the withered throat. To the sea, some force has driven them away from a lifetime. And in this windless heat they purpose to walk the 3 miles of shadeless beach to the store, to ask in Spanish, of which they know only yes and no, for whole wheat flour, which is unknown in the region, that she may bake their bread. They are dying in their gentleness, adorned with wrinkled apple smiles. Nothing remains for them but to live a little, invoking the old powers. the five-day rain, the washing hanging from the lemon tree in the rain, and the grass long and coarse, sequence broken, tension of sunlight broken, so light the rain, fine shreds pending above the rigid leaves. Wear scarlet, tear the green lemons off the tree. I don't want to forget who I am, what has burned in me, and hang limp and clean an empty dress. The two poems I'm going to read now were written at different times, but I feel that they have a certain relationship. The first one is Mrs. Cobweb. Her dress was too tight. She had fits and starts of violent memory that flew day... But, I'm going to have to start again. I'm sorry. I haven't drunk so much water in a long time. Mrs. Cobweb. Her dress was too tight. She had fits and starts of violent memory that threw daily memories down the air shaft. She looked into the cupboard and found a bone that changed into a shadow, that stole some treasure from its hiding place behind the clock. She could not follow. Her dress clutched her. But there were days when shreds of light, fringes of sun, caught her up and whizzed away with her along serene trolley lines. She reached for anything and could keep whatever she could touch. She made a collage of torn leaves she had touched, a glass moon reflector. Often she almost spoke. Sharp stars got tangled in her hair, dazzled by the quietly shining tracks. She wondered if they had passed the place of arrival. This was written about someone I've never seen, a middle-aged lady living in the provinces in the Middle West, who used to send me her poems to read. And they were really, they had wonderful lines in them, very wonderful lines. And she always used to put a dollar in the envelope to thank me for reading her poems. And I always used to put the dollar back and send it back to thank her for sending them. The charge. Returning to all the unsaid, all the lost living untranslated in any sense, and the dead, unrecognized, celebrated only in dreams that die by morning, is a mourning or ghost walking only. You must make, said music, in its voices of metal and wood, in its dancing diagrams moving apart and together, along and over and under a line, and speaking in one voice, make my image, let be what is gone. The absence. Here I lie asleep, or maybe I'm awake yet, not alone, and yet it seems by moonlight I'm alone, hardly hearing a breath beside me, and those shadows on the wall indeed are not shadows, but the featherweight dancing echoes of headlights sliding by. Here I lie and wonder what it is has left me, what element. I can't remember my dreams by morning. Maybe, as Fraser tells, my soul flew out in that moment of almost sleep. If it should go back to the scenes and times of its wars and losses, how would I ever lure it back? It would be looking for something. It would be too concentrated to hear me. O moon, watching everything, delay it in the garden among the white flowers until the cold air before sunrise makes it glad to come back to me through the screens. A stir in the air, the proper space holding existences in grave distinction. If, as you read, I walk around you in a half circle, your response to the poem will waver, maybe, like the lights just now in the thunderstorm. The balance is that fine. The dance of hiving bees it is, that design in air, joyfully reducing possibilities to one, the next act. These are our recent poems I'm going to be reading now. This one is called A Letter. I know you will come, bringing me an opal. Good. I will come to meet you, and back with you, to meet whatever it is raised to us for release. New courage has stirred in me while you were gone. They are stripping the bark from the trees to make soup. And sitting down, I crush 50 black-eyed Susans, each no bigger than a one-cent piece. I'm tired of all that is not mine. Lighting two cigarettes by mistake, lying back, one in each hand, surprised, Buddha of the anthill. A great day. The first to waken as a bear from cozy, smelly comfort. A rock dressed in brown moss, little eyes glinting, and walk out to the hunt. Notes of a scale. One. A moon with twilight overtones from open windows looking down. Hell, it goes by. The trees practice green in faithful measure. It could be what I'm waiting for is not here at all. Yet the trees have it, don't they? Absorbed in their own magic. Abundant, hermetic, wide open. Two. The painting within itself. A boy that has learned to whistle. A fisherman. The painting living its magic, admitting nothing, being. The boy pushing his hands further into his pockets. The fisherman beginning the day in dew and half dark by a river whose darkness will be defined as brown in a half hour. The painting suspended in itself, an angler in the suspense of daybreak, whistling to itself. Three. Where the noon passes in camouflage of twilight, doesn't cease to look into it from his oblique angle, leaf-wise. maintains dialogue with his heart, doesn't spill the beans, balances like a papaya tree on a single young elephant leg. 4. A glass brimming, not spilling. The green trees practicing their art. A wonder from the true world. He who accomplished it, overwhelmed with the wonder which arises out of his doing. There's a line in this poem, maintains dialogue with his heart, which comes from a translation I made with the help of a Mexican friend of a poem, a pre-Columbian poem, a Toltec poem, which was translated by the early Spaniards, and it's in it's a codex, you know. And this Mexican friend grew up in an Indian village. She's half Indian, and she was able to understand the Toltec as well as the Spanish translation. So I thought I would read you that also, the translation that I made with her help. She's called Elvira Abascal. It's called The Artist. The artist, disciple, abundant, multiple, restless. The true artist, capable, practicing, skillful, maintains dialogue with his heart, meets things with his mind. The true artist draws out all from his heart, works with delight, makes things with calm, with sagacity, works like a true Toltec, composes his objects, works dexterously, invents, arranges materials, adorns them, makes them adjust. The carrion artist works at random, sneers at the people, makes things opaque, brushes across the surface of the face of things, works without care, defrauds people, is a thief. Oh, and there's something else there that in the last stanza it says, a wonder from the true world. And I had meant to copy out the, this is a quotation, and I had meant to copy out the anecdote, but someone borrowed the book, so I couldn't. But it's from a book by Martin Buber, called Tales of the Hasidim, and this is an anecdote of Rabbi Elimelech of Lizhensk. I think the anecdote is called The True Wonder. If anyone wants to look it up, it's a very nice anecdote. Seems like we must be somewhere else. Sweet procession, rose blue, and all them bells. Bandstand red, the eyes, at treetop level seeing it. Are we what we think we are, or are we what befalls us? The people from an open window, the eyes seeing it, daytime or twilight. If we're here, let's be here now. Sweet procession, rose blue. If we're here, let's be here now. And the train whistle, who invented that? Lonesome man wanted the trains to speak for him. The lost black and white cat. Cock crowing at midnight. Broken silence. Crickets skillfully reforming it in minims and quavers. The child turns, bangs the headboard, struggles with dreams. Last night in dreams, he found the cat in the bathroom. Come back, cat. Thrash the silence with your autonomous feather tail. Imagination made fur, come back. Spring poems out of the whole cloth of silence. I have another poem about a cat here, which I hadn't meant to put in the program, but someone asked me to read it, so I'll read it here. The Innocent. The cat has his sport, and the mouse suffers, but the cat is innocent, having no image of pain in him. An angel dancing with his prey carries it, frees it, leaps again with joy upon his darling plaything. A dance, a prayer. How cruel the cat is to our guilty eyes. Girlhood of Jane Harrison. At a window, so much is easy to see. An outleaning from indoor darkness to garden darkness. But marzipan? Could so much sweetness not seem banal? No, it was a calling of roses by other names. Now from, as it may be, the cedar tree, out went the points of the star. The dance was a stamping in of autumn, a dance in the garden to welcome the fall. The diagram was a diamond, like the pan for star cake. Multiplied, the dancer moved outward to all the promontories of shadow, the forest bays, the moon islands, with roses of marzipan, the garden dissolved its boundaries. Another journey. From a world composed, closed to us, back to nowhere, the north. We need a cold primrose sting of east wind. We need a harsh design of magic lights at night over drab streets, tears salting our mouths, whether the east wind brought them, or the jabbing of memories and perceptions, who knows? Not history, but our own histories. A brutal dream drenched with our lives, intemperate, open, illusory, to which we wake, sweating to make substance of it, grip it, turn its face to us, unwilling, and see the snowflakes glitter there and melt. This poem that I'm going to read now has the peculiarity of having been written on an airplane. The Takeoff. The mountains, through the shadowy flickering of the propellers, steady, melancholy, relaxed, indifferent, a world lost to our farewells. the rising of the smoke from valleys, the pearly waters, the tight-lipped brown fields, all is relaxed, melancholy, steady, radiant with dawn stillness, the world indivisible from which we fly, sparks, motes, flickers of energy, willful, afraid, uttering harsh interior cries, silent, waving and smiling to the invisible guardians of our losses.
Let me reiterate that we are aware of our good fortune that Ms. Levertov decided to go back to New York by way of San Francisco. It is also our good fortune that in her innocence she did not know she need not have spent herself tonight. But this has certainly been a rich evening for the Poetry Center, and in very real terms, the statue of the Poetry Center has risen with this reading of her poetry by Denise Levertov.